You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk.
World of Work.
A couple of you had asked on Twitter this morning, what is the topic for World of Work? And I was mightily pleased that this is a slot that continues to be of practical benefit to you, because we spend many hours at work every single day, and there are all sorts of complexities that arise, and you may not have the expertise to deal with it because you are there for your core skill set. You're not necessarily an expert on some of the labor law and regimes that regulate your relationship with your place of employment. So for the next 30 minutes, it's an open line. You can give us a call. We'll see whether we can help you, or rather my expert guest I'm going to introduce to you in a second. She's no stranger to this platform. It is an open line, 011-883-0702, on all labor-related matters. And if you are in Cape Town, give us a call on 021-446-0567. And let's see whether we can help you just relieve a little bit of your anxiety by empowering you to know what your rights are, what your employer's rights are, and how to handle some really sticky issues. Human beings are complicated. Tensions and difficulties, agreements, disagreements, they will arise in the world of work, and it's how we deal with them that will determine whether or not you can have a relationship being nurtured between yourself and the company that is hopefully mutually beneficial. Natasha Mone from Mone Attorneys Incorporated is with us. Natasha, of course, is a regular on the show, and that's because we love her brain and her problem-solving skills. Natasha, thank you so much for coming in today.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Eusebius. I wanted to come on today because I wanted to discuss the latest Constitutional Court case, Sakawu versus Woolworths. This is a matter where the employees were told by Woolworths that they wanted to change their time period, their time frame of work. And originally, the Sakawu members said no. And then Sakawu started consulting with Woolworths, and Woolworths misinterpreted what they were saying. In actual fact, they were agreeing to the terms and conditions that Woolworths wanted to change unilaterally at first. And Woolworths, with this anomaly, then dismissed 44 members.
Wow.
And that was all the way in 2006, I believe. So they eventually won their court case at the Constitutional Court on the 6th of November this year. And the Constitutional Court put all 44 members back into the workplace, and obviously retrospective payment then kicks in. My point here is that retrenchment is a no-fault dismissal. You have to be sure as to the retrenchments being necessary, and you have to ensure that the consultation is robust and that everything is said, that you are able to give out in alternatives, that those alternatives are considered, that the information that is given is correct and above board, and that you form almost a collective, like they use the union. And by the way, there was 144 people dismissed, and only 44 people joined that union. If you do not join a union, you are able to be represented by somebody else, but they must know what they're doing. And you're entitled to be robust when you consult. You do not have to consult orally or face-to-face. You can consult on email. And in fact, when it gets heated, I suggest always to my clients, do it on email. It literally is the same thing. So there it is. Judge Kampepe said Woolworths failed to show that the retrenchments were operationally justifiable. Now, this is for Woolworths a complete loss. It's not even a Pyrrhic victory. It's a complete loss for them, because what it says to them is your managers have not undertaken the reason, the rationale for the retrenchment. They haven't filtered it down correctly. And in doing so or not doing so, that entire retrenchment was unlawful. It wasn't even unfair. It was unlawful.
Okay. If one could go back into time 12 years back and Woolies did not flex its muscle in terms of having a monopoly of economic power over vulnerable workers, what ought they have done process-wise to be consistent with the letter and spirit of the law?
Well, simply follow the law. It's Section 189 of the Labour Relations Act. And in this case, it would have been Section 189 and Section 189A of the Labour Relations Act because it was a large-scale retrenchment. It needed some form of emotional intelligence. Firing people, putting them on, you know, bread and water for a long time is emotionally draining on any manager. And you really needed to speak honestly and truthfully to the employees, and you had to listen to them. The law, when I say follow the law, I'm not just taking the quick fix.
I hear you.
The law is so pedantic when it comes to Section 189, retrenchments. It tells you if you get an alternative, you need to reply and respond to that alternative. Now, had Woolworths responded to Sakawul's alternative, and they have to do so by law in writing, this would never have happened. This is a complete miscommunication. It's an anomaly. It's a huge mistake by Woolworths. And this is, you know, I'm banding Woolworths around, but this doesn't.
It's instructive. It doesn't just happen there. I'm thinking of many of my colleagues who are very nervous as the year ends at the SABC. Mm. There's talk of retrenchments there. Many other companies because of the downturn in the economy. Now, let's say, for example, I am working at a place like the SABC. Mm. There's talk in the media. Maybe it hasn't even landed yet in my inbox from one of the bosses, or maybe it has, an email that says, I'm sorry, guys, really, we've done badly over the last year or two. In order for us to not close shop entirely as Prime Media, as RMB, we're going to have to initiate a process of retrenching some staff to try and keep our cost curve down. What is some of the most important first responses that I must give as an employee who now feels vulnerable and who fear that I may be one of the people who will lose their job?
There are two fundamental things as an employee, especially of SABC, that you need to take note of. The one is the sexual harassment report that came out. I have said to the SABC that do not start a retrenchment process before you have dealt with the perpetrators of these horrendous crimes. That's one. Second, look at it historically. I have people come to me when I visit the SABC, say to me, you know, Natasha, I was permanent and all of a sudden they put me on a contract and my contract is about to expire. That is not above board. That is preempting retrenchment. That's preempting the easy way out. And it may work for a few people at the SABC, but again, you get a collective together, like they got in the sexual harassment report, together, and a savvy lawyer is going to turn around and say, you preempted, you contemplated retrenchment before you actually retrenched. And in law, once again, Section 189 says, as soon as you contemplate retrenchments, you must retrench. So that is fundamental to SABC. But what I would do is I would look at the letters that they're giving you. Section 1893 states these are the parameters that you need to speak about. You need to speak about your reasons. Now, there can only be three reasons. It can be for economic, structural, and technological grounds in terms of retrenchment. You then need to see whether or not they have come back to you with regard to alternatives, because there are lots of alternatives that I'm sure the SABC journalists and other people can come up with. Your selection criteria. And that's why I said fundamental to that is get rid of the rot first before you start looking at the person who is a complete victim, a secondary victim of the rot, the period in which they are going to do it, and the severance pay proposed.
But who ultimately gets to take the decision if the processes I adhere to in terms of the law on the substance of the decision-making, where does it lie? So, for example, let's say the company sends me an email. They offer both economic and technological reasons. Mm. Let's say they talk about an alternative. Mm. The alternative is to scale down my KPIs, to give me a new job, to say, you CBS, we're going to get rid of you in this position, but maybe you can go into, I don't know, a little bit of training over there, half the amount of time. This is what we can afford. And so they're going through the things that you have mentioned. Mm. I then counter propose and I say, no, I think you must continue to employ me with the salary scale and benefits I currently have. Here's an alternative range of activities that I can perform as a new job description for me that I think will be commensurate with keeping the status quo in terms of what you pay me. This seems like a goodwill process, but at the end of the day, a decision has to be taken. Am I entitled to have my version be respected for how to resolve this horrible situation? Or can Natasha come back and say, I hear you. I've taken a week to think about your alternative. I'm afraid it doesn't work for us. It will still be too onerous in terms of our rescue plan. Take our version for how we can retain you on a reduced basis, or otherwise re-enter the labor market, dude.
Look, it sounds feasible, but at the end of the day, Natasha has to give you reasons, cogent reasons, as to why I don't accept what you are saying. Also, your listeners must be very careful, because if the alternative is reasonable, and again, we can debate who's reasonable.
Yeah.
But if the alternative is not reasonable to you, if they say to you, okay, Eusebius, I now want you to sit in Bloemfontein and run that show there from Bloemfontein, and your and everything is here in Johannesburg, then it's sure. not reasonable for you. But if you don't accept a reasonable alternative and you don't tell them why it is unreasonable, be careful, because that impinges on your severance package and you will not get a severance package.
Okay. So reasons are important. It's a rational process. It's evidence-based. Keep everything documented and then call Natasha at some point. Samantha, thank you so much for calling in today. Okay, we'll come back to Samantha. John, welcome to the show. Hello, John.
Hi, good afternoon. You see this, I've got a question. I work for a company which was funded by an international person with plenty of money. The South African director passed away. We carried on till March of this year, where they had a mass retrenchment under Section 189. 106 people were laid off due to the occupational requirement of no funding and the business could not continue. Now, a couple of months later, they are now opening up in the UK. Is that legal to do that here?
John, is that your question?
Yes.
Yes, it is. It is legal. What they've done is they've shut down South Africa and they're opening up in UK. And obviously, they're going to argue that for some sort of economically sound reasons, they want to compete there. However, be clever, John. Say to them, I believe that you've opened your business. I still haven't found a job. I would like to come and work in the UK with you and see where that gets you. Because if they do open up again as the same form of entity as they were in South Africa, then they are hiring again. And surely, John, when you were retrenched, did you get a time frame of them coming back to you should things change? Is John still on the line? Yeah. How did they end your relationship with them? Did they say, if in 6 months' time and there's a position available for you, we will hire you?
Yes.
Well, John.
Position, but now it's a very – but hang on. This is where the thing is a bit cagey. It's a very selective process. In other words, if you were a friend of a certain able body, and I'm not going to mention names, you would get the job. If you weren't – in his sort of group, you can whistle and wait.
Okay, so instead of whistling and waiting, John, because we really have to take advantage of and control of our own lives and make our own choices for ourselves, instead of whistling and waiting, John, you go to that company and you say you have been selective in the rehiring process. You haven't opened it out. You haven't been transparent. I want this job. And what do you have to say about that?
Okay, let's take a break there. 20 minutes after 11, the lines are going crazy. And that is because you love the advice of Natasha. I'm just sitting back enjoying these interactions. Eh? It's like being a child again and watching TV, and you have Isabel Jones, consumer rights. We've got rights here for the worker. Samantha, Tabo, Michael, everyone wants to speak to Natasha. Please make sure that you call as quickly as possible, because if the show is done, you're going to have to pay for her time.
702 and Cape Talk.
World of Work.
24 minutes after 11 o'clock, World of Work in open line with Natasha Moni. Samantha, let's see whether we've got you on a nice clear line now. Go ahead. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good day. I just want to find out, in the retrenchment process, if a company wants to get out of paying a severance package, can they force you to take another position in the company at a lower salary?
Oh, okay. Good question. So we take a couple of questions. Natasha's noting it down. Severance package. Thanks, Samantha. Nhlanhla, good morning to you. Thanks so much for calling in.
Morning. I just need to know, the company retrenched, or they supposedly retrenched all of us, saying that they've run out of projects. But now, a couple of months later, I find out that the company is actually in operation. They've gotten projects and they're working. And on top of that, there's a portion of my salary which they did not pay me, which I'm still waiting for. Is that legal? Do I have a standing something to work on, or...
Okay, let's take those two. Okay, Nhlanhla, hold on for me. We'll deal with Samantha and with Nhlanhla. Which one do you want to do first?
I just wanted to quickly deal with Nhlanhla because it's exactly the same as John. Go back to the company and say, hi, remember me, I'm here. And by the way, you forgot to pay me. Remember that in terms of payment, there's a prescription act, and that lasts for 3 years only, and then the money just goes. So please, jump up and down and remind them that you are still there. And in fact, that would be my default mechanism. Hi, remember me, okay? You're not doing so well. I want my job back.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Oh, and you forgot to pay me. So please, will you pay me? And if you do it in that style, and you just go up and up and up the chain of command, somebody will hear you. And if they don't hear you, then there's your paper trail.
Nhlanhla, have you tried that yet? Are you there, Nhlanhla? I call you Flossie, Nhlanhla. But that would be the way to proceed and see what comes out of it. Samantha's question was around severance packages, getting a different job and a lowest salary scale.
Okay, so Samantha, please listen to me very carefully, because this becomes technical. If the company is wanting to retrench you in order to force you to accept a unilateral change to the terms and conditions of their employment with you, then they are committing an automatically unfair dismissal or unfair labor practice. And you need to tell them why you cannot accept a lower salary with a lower job. That is called a demotion. Retrenchments are no-fault dismissals. They're not dismissing you because it's any of your fault. You've done nothing wrong. In fact, you're an excellent employee. So why are they punishing you? Ask them those questions, please, and please put it in writing, because, as I said, it is very, very technical. But if they are trying to force you to take an alternative position, which is really a demotion, you can't afford it, then that is the reasonable alternative that you've answered as unreasonable, and therefore you should be getting your severance package. UCBS, I don't know if you can remember a very long time ago, I said, what about volunteering your retrenchment?
Yes.
Now, that's important because you get more than the statutory severance package. And that is something that companies need to accept and negotiate around, or they can't retrench you if they tell you that they are not going to take that voluntary retrenchment package and they're only going to give you the norm. So that's a nice... That's a nice tactic to use when you feel like you're in a corner.
Mm. Michael, how's it?
Hi, guys. My question is not really around retrenchment, but being shifted around within an organization due to operational requirements, so to say. Just to be brief, I want to give a practical example. We work in an organization where we have project resource-based SLAs with clients. And the manager approaches you to say the client would like to reduce the number of resources. What rights do you have in terms of, because we've had a situation where I've been removed from the SLA. I've engaged the manager to find out what was the criteria, because there were a number of colleagues who remained on the SLA, but myself and another colleague were removed. So I engaged the manager to find out what the criteria that was used for our...
You know, Michael, you asked such a good question, and this is ubiquitous in the world of work. My industry, it happens all the time. And I've often wondered how one strikes the balance between the legitimate economic interest of a company to give you a job description that is both precise but also flexible for their purposes. But you shouldn't be screwed over either. Mm. So the way it plays out in my industry is that someone might be the technical producer for the Kaya FM breakfast show.
Mm.
And that's what they've done for the last 9 months. And then maybe the station manager says, sorry, dude, we're having a massive event this weekend in Soweto. I need you to not come in the mornings for the next week. I need your hands to help us to be building whatever it is that we need to put there. And then can the person say, no, but that's not my job. I'm here to be the technical producer in the morning. Go find someone from another division to go and help you build a stage for the Soweto gig coming up. That kind of thing. Like, how does one evaluate that? And how much leeway is there to say to your bosses, I'm employed only to do X, Y, Z?
Well, if your contract of employment says I'm employed only to do X, Y, and Z, then yes. But your contract, no doubt, will turn around and say, and when we need you in cases of emergency or urgency, you will not say no to us. Well, if you have signed that, then you can't say no to them. But really, you know, how are you adding value? Are you adding value in building a set? You know, if someone else can add more value to do that, and you can then continue to do your job where you do add value, then it doesn't make commercial sense for you to do that. Then there's something going on. I would say to Michael, please ask to see the SLA. Please ask to see the documentation.
What's SLA?
The service level agreement.
Okay.
And please ask to see the documentation from both sides where they're asking for removal. And ask him for the reasons why they removed you as opposed to removed somebody else. You know, if they're going to put him in another position where he's doing exactly the same thing, except that he was at a company that makes cappuccino, then, you know, he still has a job and he needs to deal with that internally. But, yeah, it all depends on the contracts,
sure,
on what's in writing.
Make sure. Okay, we'll spend 10 more minutes with Natasha, with her permission.
Of course.
And so I'll take two or three more calls, three maximum.
702 and Cape Talk.
World of Work.
Indeed, 24 minutes before noon, it is World of Work feature, and we are hanging out with Natasha Mone, who's trying to help you as much as she can, and she's always exceptionally helpful and generous with her advice and expertise. Thabo, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Natasha, I went through the CCMA, and I got the certificate to advance the matter to the Labour Court.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have the money for lawyers, and I have a very winnable case. So the pro bono says that I was earning too much money, so I don't qualify. Can I represent myself at the Labour Court?
You know,
or will that prejudice me?
You know what? Just think about what attorneys do. Attorneys after they've heard your story, get into your shoes, and they almost become like you. They know your story so well. But if you know your story so well, what's stopping you from being able to represent yourself at the Labour Court? Just please follow the rules. If the SASL pro bono office will not help you at the Labour Court, and yes, they do have a threshold, and you were earning over that threshold, then go to the registrar. She is very busy, so you're going to have to sit and wait like everybody else in a queue, and ask her, I've got a review. It is about X, Y, and Z. Do you have a case or a case study that can assist me in being able to do my own case? How does that sound?
Well, that sounds good. Thank you.
Okay.
By the way, you say she's very busy. You got to wait. Are you saying Tom Oyane must be patient?
I'm saying Tom Oyane must sit in the CCMA queue first before he goes to any high court of this country. That's my thinking. But obviously, Dali Mpofu and Mr. Masubuko think differently to me.
Show them what I'm looking for.
Michael, how's it?
Cool, good. How are you doing, Mr. BS?
I have never been better. The world is a good place and worth fighting for.
Finally, I can talk to you. I've been trying to talk to you every time. Anyway, I'm here for something else. And you see, yes, I used to work somewhere here in Joburg, right?
Yep.
And I used to be an external sales person, right? Now, they give me a promotion, and they didn't up my salary to start with. They put me a manager of the department, and they never changed that on my pay slip. Is that legal?
No.
Secondly, my mom passed on in 2015. I took my wife and kid. We went for funeral and stuff, and I came back. I'm supposed to be back at work on the 10th, and On the night I arrived at the airport, they didn't want to let me in the country for whatever reason. They left my wife in and kid.
Jeez.
So they put me back to the next flight. But then I phoned my boss, saying to him, listen, I've got a situation. They don't want to let me in the country. I'm having problem to come back to the country. He's like, okay, well, what do you need? I said, I need some money. So he sent me money. When I'm home, he sent me money to pay it for another ticket to come back. So I arrived about maybe 9 days late.
Mm-hmm.
And first thing from the airport, straight away to work. And he said to me, come see me tomorrow. Next thing, he said to me, I don't have my job anymore. I must come see him when he's going to call me. And I said to him, how am I going to leave? A reason they said that I deserted. If I deserted work, how come did I send him an email? And he sent me money while I'm home, believe it or not. But he said I deserted. So you didn't know where I was when you sent me money to buy another ticket.
Okay, Michael, we get the gist of it here. Natasha?
Look, in terms of your promotion and your managerial position, they need to change that on the salary slip and they need to pay you accordingly. And I hope that you're not working and accepting the decreased or the reduced salary or the same salary. And I hope that you haven't done that for a long period of time, because then they're going to think that by virtue of your action, you've accepted the fact that they're giving you more to do for less. Then, you know, you can only fire somebody for absconsion if you know that they are deliberately staying away from work. You are not, you did not deliberately stay away from work. It was impossible for you to come to work. So what happens is if you were incarcerated or they kidnapped you for some reason and you could not come to work, they, and the employer knows about it, then it really is disingenuous and unfair for them to dismiss you for absconsion and for taking the leave. Yes, they don't need to pay you, because you have been on, you know, you didn't work and you earn, it's no work, no pay. But certainly they can't dismiss you for desertion. Can I just assist employers here? Because it seems as if they get this wrong, and they get it wrong because it's not employment law, it's contract law. When somebody stays away from work, you send them a telegram and you say to them, you have stayed away from work. You need to contact us and tell us why. Or you need to come back to work tomorrow. And then you send another, a subsequent telegram. If they don't return to work, you send the last final telegram or letter, and it states as follows. You have stayed away from work for X amount. We have tried to contact you. We are unable to find out whether you want to come back to work. We believe that you have terminated or cancelled the contract or repudiated the contract. This repudiation, this cancellation, I accept. Okay.
Sure.
And unfortunately, I have no other option. Remember your default position. I have no other option but to terminate the relationship or accept the termination of the relationship.
Let's take a final question from Twitter this time. Ziggy says, good morning. My dad's just gone through a major back op, guys. He works for the municipality. Taken ill, wouldn't be able to do his job in, because it's presumably the back operation is relevant to what he does. And they're just unclear what, if he stops working, would he, what the process for being medically boarded or whatever the process might be, and would he receive his regular pay until the age of 65? What are the risks here of attempting to no longer work on account of ill health?
Well, it would be medically boarding, and that is up to the doctors and the insurances that the various municipalities have.
Okay.
I can't tell you how much you're going to be paid. It depends, but it is a process, and I would start the process immediately. I was sitting at a bargaining council the other day, and the company was supposed to have started medical boarding. I don't believe that they had. And they then fired the employee for absconding or you know, and because he couldn't work or he didn't want to do the work now that they said that he could do. So it's really tenuous. You know, start the medical boarding immediately. You can be permanent and temporarily incapacitated.
Yeah.
It's a process, and your doctors need to get involved as well as management.
Natasha, you've been excellent. As always, thank you so much for coming in.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That was Natasha Moni from Moni Attorneys. That's M-O-N-I, if you want to check her out online. And we'll have her back again in future.